This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carol Van Dam, and here's what's coming up.
So with the recent flooding in the Horn, many of the ongoing disease outbreaks, such as cholera, measles, we have been seeing last year and this year, very high numbers of malaria as well.
That's Lisbeth Albrecht, WHO Emergency Incident Manager for the Horn of Africa, on how flooding has added to the region's list of devastating challenges. Also, results are still coming in from Sierra Leone's general elections, and Mali's military junta says 97% of voters approved a new constitution. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Sierra Leone is still counting the ballots from Saturday's general elections amid concerns about whether the process was fair and whether the results could spark violence. We have reporter Eric Kawa on the line with us from Freetown. Thanks for joining us, Eric. After the violence reported over the weekend during ballot counting of at least one APC volunteer being killed at party headquarters, what are the conditions like today on the streets of Freetown and elsewhere?
All right, so Carol, as I can tell you, it's actually a time in Sierra Leone where people are constantly listening to radio stations, monitoring media houses, and looking forward to seeing what would be the situation so far. As of today, this morning I was around the central business district where I observed that business was normal. We have shops that were opened, but then following up with sources now, it's showing that some shops are closing immediately after the announcement of 60% of results by the Chief Electoral Commissioner, because there are these kind of fears and the rest of it. So that's what we're following up right now on the ground.
What is the government saying about that female volunteer who was killed over the weekend?
Well, yes, that report was actually sent yesterday when the opposition party office, they actually were surrounded and engulfed by security personnel who were there showing some drone footage. So I haven't still personally come across any statement, let's say, from any government official that is stating what the situation is as of that. But then the situation was very worse yesterday, and reports coming from the party office saying that the woman is confirmed dead. So, of course, there are concerns. And I also spoke to a source in the party office who told me that they are planning arrangements for the funeral of the woman, definitely.
And what about the preliminary results? They were still to be expected to be announced. Is that still happening, do you think, at some point today or this evening?
Well, around 2 p.m. local time here in Sierra Leone, we were at the Election Command Center, where actually some 60% of the results were announced. And with this one, the National Electoral Commissioner says they announced partial presidential election results, a presidential election conducted on the 24th of June. And the results represent 60% of total polling station results processed each district, cleared by the Electoral Commission for Sierra Leone. Quoting directly from the press release, and the management systems at the regional tally centers in Freetown, Bo, Kenema, McKinney, and Port Loko. So that they gave those results so far. And out of that, we saw the Sierra Leone People's Party with over 1 million votes as of this result, and the opposition All People's Congress with over 793,000 votes so far as of that result, 60%. And the third one.
Okay, well, thanks, Eric.
And
Thank you, Eric. We'll be talking with you again as this process continues. That is Eric Kawa speaking with us live from Freetown. The chairman of the Ethiopian Election Board announced her resignation today. The board chair made the announcement amid reports that reinstalling the Tigray People's Liberation Front as a legal entity turned out to be a deadlock, to the point that it required political intervention from Abiy Ahmed's administration. The chairperson of the National Election Board of Ethiopia, Bertukan Mijdeza, announced on her Monday resignation from the role on her social media site. She said she will be resigning as of August 7th, 2023. Until then, she said she will work on unfinished tasks on her turf and on making arrangements for administrative transition. Leading UN agencies warn that millions of people in the Greater Horn of Africa are trapped in an emergency hunger and health crisis driven by overlapping disasters, including climate change and conflict. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The World Food Program reports seven countries in the East Africa region are suffering unprecedented levels of food insecurity. It reports nearly 60 million people are not getting enough food to eat to remain active and healthy. WFP Senior Emergency Officer Dominique Ferretti says this hunger crisis has sent malnutrition rates soaring. He says more than 5 million children under 5 are acutely malnourished in the Horn of Africa. Among them, he says, are 1.7 million severely malnourished children who are at risk of dying if they do not get specialized nutritional care. Speaking from WFP's regional bureau in Nairobi, Kenya, Ferretti says these alarming figures have not been caused by one single emergency.
Rather, in the past 3 years, Eastern Africa has experienced COVID-19, an Ebola outbreak, and other epidemics ranging from cholera to measles to dengue, a devastating desert locust plague that swept the region, destroying crops and incomes, and perhaps more importantly, the vast conflict and insecurity forcing millions from their homes, new refugee displacements from countries including Ethiopia, Somalia, and now, unfortunately, Sudan.
Rains have fallen in the Horn of Africa, bringing relief to the region, which has suffered the longest drought in recent history. But UN agencies warn one rain is not enough to end the crisis. Indeed, the World Health Organization reports people in the Greater Horn of Africa are facing many health emergencies. Lisbeth Albrecht is WHO Emergency Incident Manager for the region. Speaking from Nairobi, she reports numerous health problems have arisen from 5 years of prolonged drought. She warns of worsening health conditions in areas affected by heavy rains and severe flooding.
So with the recent flooding in the Horn, many of the ongoing disease outbreaks, such as cholera, measles, we have been seeing last year and this year, very high numbers of malaria as well. So with the impact of flooding, we see these diseases worsening.
Albrecht says WHO is bracing for new challenges as more rain is expected in the Eastern Horn, while drought-like conditions prevail in the west of the region. She says both extreme weather events will reduce access to clean water. This, she notes, will lead to an upsurge of mosquito and waterborne diseases and have a harmful impact on nutrition and health. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Human Rights Watch has accused Sudan's paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, and allied Arab militias of attacking non-Arab communities in West Darfur State. The rights watchdog group is urging the UN Security Council to impose targeted sanctions and other punitive measures on military commanders and leaders of the militia. Michael Atit has this report from Juba.
Leticia Beder, Human Rights Watch Deputy Director in the African Division, says she is concerned about the continued fighting in Sudan and the targeted ethnic killing in Al Janina of West Darfur State. Speaking to VOA via messaging application from Rome, Beder says Human Rights Watch is worried about reports and evidence of serious abuses taking place in West Darfur. She called on the UN Security Council and other international bodies to adopt urgent measures for protecting communities affected by the violence in Darfur.
Individual targeted sanctions against individuals, commanders of security forces, allied militias who are responsible for some of the most serious attacks, including killings of civilians, including burning of civilian property, should be sanctioned. But this has to form part of a much more broader, comprehensive response.
VOA reached out to RSF's Special Advisor for Foreign Affairs, Ibrahim Mukhair, for comment on this story, but he said he was still reviewing the report and would get comment later. Sudan's Doctors' Union reported that 1,100 people have died in the West Darfur capital of Al Janina since mid-April when the RSF and allied Arab militia attacked ethnic and self-defense militia in Al Janina town. Human Rights Watch officials called on the warring parties and allied militias to end attacks on civilians and guarantee safe access to aid agencies and families fleeing from the violence. The Rights Watchdog says members of the UN Security Council should do more to deter further killings in Sudan.
Well, we've obviously seen meetings happening on Sudan, but we have seen no concrete action taken from the level of the Security Council. There is a key role for the Security Council to play in preventing further abuses and atrocities from happening in Darfur.
Beda says Human Rights Watch believes the decision to end the mandate of the peacekeeping mission in Darfur was wrong.
We had raised the alarm of the decision by the international community to pull out peacekeeping forces from Darfur at a time where the alarm bells were already ringing. And communities there, and especially communities from displaced communities, had already been warning that pulling out peacekeeping forces would leave them incredibly vulnerable.
Last year, West Darfur experienced the highest rates of food insecurity in Sudan. The United Nations says nearly 2 million people have been displaced in Sudan since the conflict started on April 15th, and about 150,000 have fled to Chad. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, check out voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Hundreds of villagers in Kenya's coastal Lamu County have fled their houses after armed men attacked two villages Saturday and killed five people, beheading four of them. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
Following Saturday's night attack, gunshots were heard in Juhudi village in Lamu County on Monday afternoon. Eunice Njoroge is assistant chief of Majembeni village in Lamu County. She is one of the government officers who visited the villages of Juhudi and Salama, where five people were killed by suspected Al-Shabaab militants. A reinforcement was sent to Juhudi, though there were enough security men in the area, Njoroge says. Security forces and officials went to determine whether the gunshots heard in the area were fired by terrorists or security forces in the area. She says there have been no reports of deaths other than those reported yesterday. Kenyan security forces said they were pursuing the attackers in the forest around the villages and assured residents they will be safe. However, witnesses say many residents of Juhudi and Salama have fled their homes for fear of further attacks. Peter Muthengi is a pastor in the village of Salama. He says the residents are afraid for their lives. The people who live in the villages are fleeing their homes and looking for a safe place to stay, he says. The people that live around the forest are terrified. There is calm in some sections, but there's a lot of worry. At least 30 armed men dressed in military uniforms and sarongs stormed the two villages in Lamu County on Saturday night. Stephen Muredi, 39, lost his cousin Peter Muredi in the attack. Muredi says they found his cousin at home, broke into his house, took him out and killed him outside the house. He says after killing him, they burned his motorbike, beddings and bicycle. I gathered the rest of his belongings and kept them safe. Terrorist strikes in Lamu County, particularly in the areas near the forest, have killed dozens in recent years. Al-Shabaab has been active in Kenya since the country sent troops into Somalia as part of an African Union peacekeeping mission in 2011. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Some African analysts say the drama that unfolded in Russia this past weekend when Wagner mercenaries advanced on Moscow to apparently attack the city but then turn back can only be good for Ukraine. Darren Taylor reports.
Observers say the future of the Wagner Group, a key factor in Russian President Vladimir Putin's war on Ukraine, is in the balance following its rebellion against Moscow. There are thousands of Wagner mercenaries in Africa. In some places, they control oil fields and gold and diamond mines and have been important to Putin in exerting influence on the continent. In Johannesburg, Wits University international relations expert Professor Gilbert Kadiagala says Yevgeny Prigozhin's stillborn mutiny has damaged Russia's war effort.
With the Ukrainians beginning, therefore, to remobilize and do a counteroffensive, this is not going to work very well for Russia because it would reveal that there are big, big weaknesses within the Russian military. A very bad sign for Russia if it wants to win that war militarily. It could be a good sign for Ukraine because a weaker Russia militarily would potentially be willing to negotiate a peaceful settlement.
Military expert at South Africa's Stellenbosch University, Abel Esterhazy, says the events in Russia could eventually result in more Wagner members leaving Ukraine for Africa and other places. But only if the Kremlin carries out its threat to punish Wagner, thereby alienating the group even further. Esterhazy is, however, convinced that Prigozhin's aborted assault on Moscow was a ruse designed to pressure the Kremlin into making changes aimed at escalating its war on Ukraine.
I think the most acceptable narrative is perhaps his discomfort with the way in which the generals orchestrated this whole campaign, his discomfort with the distribution of materials, specifically the fact that Wagner did not receive the weapon systems he asked for. And of course, within all of this, he was explicit in blaming the Russian generals for many of the failures on the Russian campaign side, almost as if he wants to say, if you've left it to me, I would have done a much better job.
Esterhazy says in Prigozhin's absence from Ukraine, there's now a danger of a real Wagner mutiny because he's become the human face of Russia's war and is very popular among his troops.
In many ways, he's the only person that can be trusted in talking the truth about the Russian military. He presented himself as a leader of men, often photographed with his men in the field, talking to them, being an inspiration to them, visiting the families of the Wagner soldiers who were killed in the conflict. He's very popular within Russia. But I don't think he've launched the whole operation to challenge Putin's power. And I think from the beginning, perhaps, he didn't really want to march to Moscow to challenge Putin's power.
Esterhazy says Putin's making a clever move by isolating Prigozhin, for the time being, in Belarus. Any move now to punish the Wagner commander, he believes, could spark a major uprising against Putin himself. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Palarinya Refugee Settlement in Uganda is reporting high numbers of suicides and suicide attempts by the people who live there. Groups who work with the refugees say denial of food and a failure to meet basic needs are the main causes. Halima Athumani has the story from Obanji District, Uganda.
Since the start of this year, the Lutheran World Federation, a non-profit working with refugees in the Palarinya settlement in Uganda's Obongi district, has recorded one suicide and 20 attempts by refugees. 18-year-old James Wubam came to Palarinya with his uncle. He says his uncle's wife would deliberately deny him food. He also said he found it difficult to ask his uncle for basic needs, including school requirements. He doesn't have any siblings to share these issues with, and this has put him in a deep depression. He says, I thought of hanging myself. I went to a local club with my friends and consumed some alcohol. When I got home, I contemplated suicide. According to the Lutheran World Federation, between January and September 2019, Palarinya recorded the most suicide cases of all refugee settlements in Uganda, with 29 suicides attempted and 13 completed. In 2022, the Federation says one suicide and 45 attempted suicides were reported in the settlement. Isaac Oturi, a clinical psychologist with the Lutheran World Federation, says most of the 20 suicide attempts so far this year involved young people triggered by unmet needs.
In a settlement here, people are, their hands are tied. you survive only on the given items. Now you can't make it for yourself. Now to make it worse is that even those who are in position to work, there's very few or less or minimal livelihood opportunities that would help them to earn a better living.
Of the more than 1.5 million refugees in Uganda, most of whom come from South Sudan, Palorinya hosts 123,000. In July, the World Food Programme will begin targeting food and cash aid to refugees best on need. Fearing they'll be left to fend for themselves, some refugees have considered suicide. Michael Gale said that when he found out that his name was listed under those whose families would not get food, his wife left him. Left to fend for four children, he contemplated a quick escape.
They can call you Baba or Bal. They know to eat now. No food now. No anything now. Me, I cannot even go to get labor from some people now. I'm at one place like this. Now things will go to my heart. That better for me to calm myself.
To ensure each case is attended to in time, agencies have set up para-counselors, also known as suicide gatekeepers. Para-counselor Dianga Betty Kenyi says they have to depend on second parties to get help for those attempting suicide.
The neighbor will run to us and give us that information. And then we go and access how the client is.
With little funding and just one clinical psychologist in the settlement, many victims do not get the support they need. Halima Athmani for VA News, Obongi District, Uganda.
Mali's electoral authority says voters have approved a new constitution. Colonel Assimi Goïta says this paves the way for a transition to a return to a civilian-led government from the military junta, but not everybody is convinced that the change is a path toward democracy. Weeks after the discovery of mass graves on land owned by cult leader Pastor Paul McKenzie, some families are still searching for news about their loved ones in Kenya. Saida Swala met a family from Mombasa and has this report.
Hakuna Mungu kama wewe.
At the home of James Tole Mombela, the family says a prayer for their brother Nelson Mombela. It has been months since they saw him. His brother James Mombela says his disappearance came after Nelson stopped taking his kids to school and began behaving oddly. The brother said people assumed but didn't know Mackenzie's teachings at that time. He said his brother kept saying that the world is ending and Jesus is coming back. However, his family differed with him, the brother added. Nelson Kimbichi Mombela quit his job and secretly moved his wife and six children to the Shakahola farm owned by Pastor Paul Mackenzie. The religious cult leader was arrested in early May, accused of ordering his followers to starve themselves and their children to gain salvation. Janet Mombela is Nelson's mother. She says it seems like they started training the children slowly on how to fast. She said she asked her son if he was eating, as he had lost a lot of weight. When mass graves were discovered in Shakahola, James made his way there to search for his brother, sister-in-law, and their six children. What he learned was shocking. He says one of the survivors told him about his niece Janet and his brother called Sylvester, later baptized to be called Paul. The person told him that he lived close to Pastor Paul Mackenzie and that the six children, including their mother, had died. Investigators are still trying to determine how many people lost their lives following the cult-like sect. So far, they have uncovered more than 300 bodies. They also found personal belongings, including this Bible belonging to Mr. and Mrs. Nelson Kimbichi Mombela. Nelson's mother says she misses her son. She says he was a good boy. He was quiet and very soft-spoken. The number of missing people is still far greater than the bodies recovered, according to Hassan Musa of the Kenya Red Cross.
As Kenya Red Cross, we've registered 618 missing people. These are people reported by their family members that in one way or the other, they're either in Shakahola Forest or at the Malindi Sub-County Morg.
The family said they gave DNA samples to investigators in the hopes it could help them identify the bodies of Nelson and his family. Saida Swale for VOA News, Mombasa, Kenya.
And that wraps it up for this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mukbil Yarborough, and engineer, Bob Bass, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.